Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Halfway home on a Monday morning. It's Bennett Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Woods continuing his Hawaiian vacation until Wednesday. But look who is sitting in Woodsy's chair joining us this morning. And very happy to have in studio the pre- and post-game show host for San Diego Padres baseball here on 97.3 The Fan. It is Sam Levitt. Sammy, it is so good to see you, so good to have you. Always appreciate your Monday contributions, but this is going above and beyond, especially on an off day when the Padres are on the road and you don't have to work to come up this early. Thank you very much, Sammy.
Well, my pleasure. And as you guys know, I am a big tier one. I listen well beyond when I'm on the show every Monday at around 8:35, 8:40. So good to be here. That Woodsy guy, I mean, just leaves town, heart of a playoff race.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Must be nice.
How hard of a worker is Sammy? Well, we know that he does, I don't know, 158 or more of these games a year. I mean, it's a rare. You may take a day off or two for like a wedding or something to go to, but you're pretty much going to work every single game. So from spring training, when you show up, when they report in mid-February, until the last, hopefully, playoff game is over, you're working 95% of the days for that stretch of time.
Yeah, and spring training.
Yeah, exactly.
Nowadays,
so,
too.
Yeah. So February 15th or so until hopefully early November. I mean, it hasn't been that late yet for the San Diego Padres, but as deep as they go.
My first year in 22, it was long. It felt like a real, real grind. Now, I didn't go to spring training, but I also only got here a week before the season started, and the whole thing was such a whirlwind. By the time it was over,
Was that the lockout year, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was like the weird, like, we didn't know when we were going to spring training. We were waiting on all that to happen.
Right.
And Adam's like, guess what? You guys are going out next week. We're like, okay.
Right. Yeah. I remember
that was the first
actually.
First time we talked to you.
Yeah. And we, while I was in the process of interviewing for this job, the lockout was still going on. And in my head, there was a period of time where I thought to myself, well, what if they don't start till July? Or what if the season doesn't happen? I didn't tell Amarillo for a while that I was, you know, maybe, and I was pretty transparent with them, but I didn't tell them for a while because I didn't know what was going to happen. I saw a scenario in my head where I could get this job, the season doesn't happen. Who knows if I actually get onboarded to do the job until whenever, and maybe I would, you know, be back in Amarillo for some portion of the season. Because that was the thing, the minors were going to play because they weren't part of the union yet.
That's
at
right.
That time. They were going to play regardless. Anyway.
How did that interview go? Was it just you and Adam, or, I mean, Paul, we had an interview with Adam. We met him like at a coffee shop.
Yeah,
Ben was 45 minutes late.
I was late, which is usually not a great thing on your interview. Like, you show up late to the interview, you don't get the job.
Yeah, the very first interview was just Adam.
Just Adam.
And I remember he was, Zoom. He likes to use the blurry background. Have you ever seen that? He always likes to blur the background on a Zoom. I remember that.
It was focus in the back.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Went pretty well?
Yeah,
any questions he asked you? Like, were they weird? Were they, like, strange questions? Like,
no. I remember
was it like the NFL Combine?
I remember he was very concerned with just the ability to do the job day in, day out, like the schedule part of it, which I understood because they were really looking for somebody to do all of it, which it hadn't been here in the past, right?
No,
where
no,
there was
yeah,
one guy.
We,
so
yeah, no, we had
they were very worried
split
about
it
that
up.
Part
I mean, Scraby did
yeah.
some, Braden did some, I did some.
Right.
I think even Woodsy did a couple of them, and we just kind of
yeah.
But that's not the best
that.
Way to go. It's such a better show when someone can take ownership,
yeah, hold it down,
and pride over the pre and the post game shows.
Yes.
And when I did it with Craig, we did 4 years. I missed like one day for the birth of my child, but essentially. In 4 years, neither of us missed a show, and you've been kind of the same way, which is so impressive, which brings me to my question.
Yes.
Because you work so hard. Obviously, I would think you're very tired at the end of all these days. So I wake up this morning, and the first tweet I see, and right now it tells me on Twitter how long ago it was. So this was 5 hours ago, so it's 8 a.m. now, which means at 3 a.m. you're up tweeting the pitching probables that have been announced for the Padres-Pirates series. Why are you up at 3 a.m. tweeting pitching probably
2:28
2:28 There you go.
Yeah. Well, I did go to sleep,
okay,
and then
good.
I like I typically do. Now I take.
So you weren't just coming back from the bars at last
no.
call at 2 a.m.
No,
staggering,
I did last night
staggering
after the game.
Into
no,
the tweet out pitching
nice,
problems.
I did go for a nice walk and dinner and PB last night, but I didn't come home that late. So I was home by like 10:30. I did go to sleep. I wake up in the middle of the night a lot. I was on my phone. I received the information with the probables. And I tweeted them out. No surprise, really, in the probables.
I mean, you
King
didn't think I could wait.
Cease.
I could go back to sleep and just do this in the morning. You wanted to make sure.
I could
sure
break some news on Ben and Woods if I wanted
that it
to.
Got out to. In, yeah, 2:28 a.m. I want to make sure that if there are Padres fans who just happen to be up right now, they're going to get the Dylan Cease versus Bailey Falter matchup for Tuesday. It's not even today. It's not until tomorrow, Tuesday.
Well, you want to be first to the punch.
They're going
to tweet it out.
Face, yeah.
I can't get beat on the probable.
Well,
so yes.
I saw it first
tweet
from you. So,
and but then, I will say because I had to go look at who was pitching for the Pirates because I couldn't remember that off the top of my head. So I did have to.
And they
there was
it
some
too,
work
because,
I did it.
Yeah, they had Marco Gonzalez listed for Tuesday initially, but you found out that it's going to be Bailey
Falter.
Falter.
That's at least what, yeah, they've listed.
Then Marco Gonzalez and then Luis Ortiz and a TBD for the Padres. They still can't give us an entire series. That would be too bold
yeah,
to name three starters.
I was kind of racking my brain about that on
I
the way
have,
over.
I have a theory.
Yeah, because both Perez and Vasquez would be on 4 or more days rest. I guess Perez would be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Well, yeah, that would
be
4 days
yeah
rest. Vasquez would be even more. You know, what's your theory?
So,
is it Joe related?
I think it is a little Joe related.
Yeah, could be.
And I feel like if they think the bullpen now Joe's not going to pitch on Thursday because he pitched yesterday. They're not going to throw him
no,
in 3 days
no
rest.
Way.
So it's going to be either Perez or Vasquez. But if things are going well, my guess is they wouldn't mind skipping Vasquez. Because Vasquez, we don't talk about him like King and all the innings that King has racked up, but Randy Vasquez has pitched way more than I think we anticipated he was going to. And
yeah,
he has some of the same, young in his career, has not built up, you know, no 200-inning seasons in his past either. So they may want to save some of his innings for, you know, September and October. Not that I expect him to be in the playoff rotation.
I was going to say, I think that's why we've been talking about King
yeah,
the most.
Yeah,
because
exactly
he's been so good and but, so dominant.
But Randy Vasquez could be a swing man for them, you know, or a long inning reliever, and they might want to save some of those innings. And I don't know that Martin Perez, now if he pitches like he did on Saturday, who knows? He may go every fifth day the rest of the season as long as he throws like that. But
yeah,
they probably don't mind throwing Perez, who had some time off, was injured, came back, has not used as many innings. He could be a workhorse, especially if he throws well. And get him as often as possible every 5 days if he's pitching well. And if they eat him up at the end of the season, no big deal. He may not even make the postseason roster, but he could definitely be leaned on heavily for innings as a veteran
yeah
who's done it before, has been to an All-Star game, has pitched deep into seasons before. He might be the guy you want to go a little more often.
Yeah,
so
no,
they're probably thinking about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Perez was great, I thought. And he pitched a little bit differently in that start. You could already see sort of the Ruben Niebla effect, if you will. He got a lot of swing and miss in that game, more than he's got throughout the season. So that was encouraging. And I think that's a pretty good theory on the innings part of
and,
it.
And then if the bullpens, you know, if Cease and King throw well and the bullpen's really fresh, they can then plot maybe in the Miami series to bring Joe back
right
knowing, hey, we may only get three or four innings, but we've got a pretty fresh pen. We'd feel comfortable having him pitch on the big league level rather than going for another minor league start.
It could be like a sort of TBD thing. I'm with you because Joe threw, what was it, like
43, 35 strikes. Yeah.
Right. So that puts him for his next outing, wherever that is. If it's in the major leagues and the minor leagues, I don't know, probably somewhere in the 60-ish pitches range, which is not nothing, but you can't, and Joe's talked about this, you can't put them in a bad position with their bullpen. Like, that's something, especially this time of year, you don't want to do. So, who knows? I mean, where Joe makes that next start, that next outing, if it's a rehab start or if it's in the major leagues, you're right. It may be sort of day by day to see where the bullpen is, where they are, how they want to bring them back. But you would assume the earliest he would come back would be Friday because that would be kind of a normal 4 days rest.
Okay, we got Cease going. Like, you expect 7.
Right. But you can't count on it.
That's why plans can change. But I think in their mind, they would be looking at, okay, we got the off day. You got a Cease day. All right, we might be able to make something happen.
Right.
I think with the moves that they made at the trade deadline, though, and you know, we saw the trickle-down effect yesterday. Padres were up 10-2, and they still threw Yuki Matsui in the ninth inning. Yuki Matsui, don't tell anybody.
Been great.
Been really great.
Yeah.
For like now, what, about a month and a half, Sammy? I mean, really good. If you look at his numbers in a vacuum, he's a good relief pitcher. He had some struggles. He had some strike zone problems. He's fixed those. He's, I think, 22 strikeouts, one walk in his last however many appearances. He's a very effective reliever. But right now, he's your number 6-7 option out of the pen. He's coming in 8-run games in the ninth inning, and he's good. He's a guy that other teams would be like loving to have in maybe the seventh inning right now. And the Padres have some riches right now in the bullpen thanks to the moves that they have made, which should give them more flexibility over these next couple of months at the end of the season with what they want to do, whatever, with the starting rotation.
Yeah, and Yuki, even if you go back, I think, a little bit farther than that, he had a really good stretch. Remember that Sunday game in Kansas City where they put him out there to close, and that was because Steven Kolick gave up all the runs
and they had to go
in the Friday game? We're going back a ways here.
Going for the sweep.
Yeah, but even before that, Yuki had been pretty solid for a handful of weeks and then had that outing in Kansas City, and really since then, I know there's been a couple of tougher ones in there, but you're right. He's been really, really good. And look, the bullpen has the potential to be, number one, the best in baseball, and number two, just an enormously huge strength for this team. And you saw it yesterday. I mean, a 10-2 game. Think about who pitched. It was Morahone, Estrada, and Matsui. And by the time Morahone came in the sixth inning, well, it was a 3-1 game then the home run by Peralta made it 6-1. But the point is, they had the luxury to go to somebody like a Jeremiah Estrada in a game that was not particularly close. Imagine saying that a week and a half ago. I mean, basically, they had three high leverage guys you could really trust in a big spot, and now that has totally changed. It is a really, really big deal.
And Morahone's given a little bit of ground lately, but they can be careful with him, and they can pitch him in slightly lower leverage situations, and he's still got good stuff. You know, he could get locked in again and be very valuable down the stretch, even though he's, I wouldn't say struggled, but he keeps giving up. Just, there's a home run here and a home run there. Not necessarily always costly. It wasn't yesterday, but you keep an eye on that sort of thing. But you have other options now.
And those are young guys. I mean, look, Adrian Morahone has been, I think, a pleasant surprise this season. I mean, think about how you viewed him going back to spring training on who he's been. Very talented arm, great stuff. I think we all understood that, but somebody that struggled to stay healthy and was up and down in his major league career.
We're trying this again, huh?
Right. And to his credit, Adrian has been just great this year. And obviously Estrada has been a wonderful find as well. But the other thing it does, we talked about the innings. A day like yesterday, Matt Waldron. Now, there was a matchup there, lefty on lefty in the sixth inning, but he ultimately threw 80 pitches in 5 2/3 innings. Gives them the ability with King, with Waldron, with a Vasquez, you know, to, as best they can, shave off some innings, shave off some pitches. So that deep bullpen, it really could have an effect in a lot of different ways. And I guess that's why you make the moves, right, to make it that kind of pen and give you that kind of advantage.
All right, let's take a timeout. We'll fix Sammy's camera on our YouTube stream. And I want you to think about this question when we come back. This is now your third season of Padres pre- and post-game. Is this the best you've seen them play over an extended stretch? Or, you know, are you going to go back to the 2022 playoffs? Is there a better stretch of Padres baseball than what you've seen basically since the All-Star break? Talk about that with Sam Levitt. He's in studio. We'll check traffic with Kelly and then back in a minute here on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I left Sam Levitt with a question. Over the last 2.5 seasons of him doing Padres pre- and post-game shows, and let's give it to the regular season here, have you seen a better stretch of Padres baseball? They've won 11 of their last 13 games, 11-3 total since the All-Star break. They've won all five series since the All-Star break. I did the math for you. I went back and looked quickly. There's only been one stretch in which the Padres have done better than 11-3 in 14 games in the last 2.5 seasons. And none of us really care that much about it because it's when they won 14 of 16 last to end year. Last season when it was kind of too late at the end of the year. And I don't know that you can give them a ton of credit for that. But other than that, there was a good start to 2022.
22 was a very good start.
14-7 in their first 21 was a really good stretch. They played good baseball to start that season. After that, they kind of slowly built their way kind of into playoff position. Last year, of course, there was really, until the end, there was no great stretches. Beginning of this season, there just wasn't. You know, they did their five-game thing and then fell apart and then five-game thing again. I don't know, Sammy. Is this the best stretch of Padres regular season baseball in the last three seasons?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I went back and looked at the start of 2022 because I'm with you. I mean, the end of 2023, they did play great in September last month, but it was a totally different situation, obviously. The start of 22 was really, really good. It's easy to forget because from about mid-June to the end of the regular season, they played 500 ball.
Correct.
Right? And for a while, it was below that, and then they kind of got hot towards the end again. But the start of 22 was really, really good. Like, I was looking at it here. There was a stretch in late April. They won a lot of games. But you look at some of the series. Like, they swept the Reds twice, once at home, once on the road. They had to play the Dodgers for three games. I think this stretch, not only because they're 11-3 since the break, but also because of the quality of the opponents. I mean, you have three series. Eight games out of the 14 they've played so far in the second half have come against first-place teams, and like not fluky first place teams, all very legitimate, talented, good first place teams in the Orioles, Guardians, and obviously the Dodgers. So the quality of the opponent, and they've gone 6-2 against those teams, like quality of opponent. And I said it during the road trip at some point towards the end of it, like you just feel it too. You feel like this is what clicking looks like. Like we talked a lot last year and a lot early this season about this team clicking all together at once, whatever definition you want to have for the word clicking. And it does feel like for the first time in a long time, the start of this second half, they are clicking as well as they have in a while.
What I like is the variety of the wins.
Yeah.
in the first 14 games of this second half of the season. And feel free to save that, Paulie. They've won some games in which the offense has carried them. They had a 12-3 win in Washington, 10-2 yesterday, scored 9 in Baltimore in that middle game. They've also had some games where starting pitching has been the key. They've had the bullpen be the key. Sometimes it's been the stars. Sometimes it's been the role players at the back, guys coming off the bench. They really have won in a variety of ways over these last 14 games to start the second half of the season. And that to me is the sign of a good team. A good team, you know, okay teams can win if they've got a good, really good pitching staff. And, you know, a pitching staff goes on a good run, you're going to win some games. But as soon as the pitching staff gives some ground, well, you give it back up. And they haven't had great starts every single time. The starting pitching's been very good, but they had a game where Waldron gave up 5 in the first inning, and they found a way to win that game. They've had other starts that haven't been perfect. For the most part, it has been very good. You're not going to win 11 out of 14 when your starting pitching is not good. But I feel like it's been a variety of ways. And I don't discount the 6 games against the Nationals and the Rockies, which are the kind of games that this team has traditionally stubbed their toe against, yeah. Other than the Friday against the Rockies. That's 5-1. Beating the teams that you should beat has always been a stumbling block for the Padres.
Yeah,
and they've done that as well.
I think it's a good point on the variety of wins. Just on this homestand alone, you had the Tuesday game against L.A. where they fall behind 5-0. Come back to win it the game after against the Dodgers was kind of an easy one. They cruised, offense showed up in a big way. Lose on Friday, and then look, let's be honest about it. Saturday's game, the offense did not do a whole lot at all. They got great starting pitching from Perez. That was a 1-1 game heading into the bottom of the 7th inning. They finally got the Cy Young candidate Tanner Gordon out of the game on Saturday. And by the way, I asked Xander about it after the game. I said, kind of what happened in that 7th inning offensively. First thing he said was, you know, we got the starting pitcher out of the game. So once they got into the Rockies bullpen, they finally had some hits. But 3-2. I mean, it's not like the offense exploded. And then yesterday, they got it rolling late offensively.
You mentioned your interview with Xander.
Yeah.
Was that where he talked about Ruben Niebla and how his message to Martin Perez?
Yeah. So the second question I asked Xander on Saturday, was about it's on the 97th. It's actually the clipped answer is on my Twitter if you want to pull it up. But I
didn't hear this, so I'm curious.
Yeah, no, it's a good answer. We should play it. Xander, I asked him about Martin Perez. And by the way, not only had Xander faced Perez a lot in the American League, but he was also his teammate in Boston. I'd have to look at what the years were, but in the last few years. And I asked him, you know, what he thought about how Perez pitched playing behind him. And the first thing he did was really start talking about Ruben.
Your starting pitcher, Martin Perez, quite a Padres debut, 6 strong innings. You've seen Perez a lot over the years as an opponent. From your perspective, what did Perez do so well today?
I had him as a teammate, you know, a couple years with the Red Sox. And, I mean, he was dotted. I mean, I'm in second. I'm right behind him. I'm like, man, you actually dotted so much today. You know, you executed your pitches well. I remember the moment he got here, I said, hey, you see Ruby right there, Ruben? Everything he says, you just do, all right? Because, I mean, I've seen this man work so hard with his pitchers, you know, and I know how much he cared for those guys, and that's one of the first I remember telling him.
That's something, though. I mean, you expect the pitchers to say it.
Right. From a position player, a star position player, yeah.
I mean,
it's something.
I've known position players, probably don't even know who the pitching coach on the team is sometimes.
I would expect Joe Musgrove to pull him aside and be like, hey, that's the guy right there.
Right.
Listen to him. But, yeah, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Xander.
And by the way, the Padres have also quietly put aside some of the narratives of the first half of the season. Remember left-handed starting pitchers?
I do.
They couldn't beat?
I kept a running list of starts and numbers.
I don't know if you have the numbers lately, but it's...
I don't have the overall numbers.
I think they've won like 10 out of 11
really?
Against left-handed starters. Yeah. I don't know what changed. I think part of it was Donovan Solano and getting Xander Bogaerts back, Manny Machado getting hot. The things that we kind of said when they were struggling against lefties, well, they need to get some of their right-handed hitters going, and they have done that. And Solano's been big. Peralta's been big, maybe not as consistent as Solano, but he's had now 2 games that I could say are the the David Peralta games.
Right.
And yesterday was one of them, and he had the other one with the big home run as well, that he's made some contributions, obviously against righties on the other side of the plate, but getting those contributions from unexpected sources has been huge for the Padres this year.
Yeah, I think first on Solano, he's been great. I mean, you can't say enough about what he's been. And every time he's in there, he impacts the game, right? Whether that was pinch hitting late against the Dodgers to win it, whether that was the other day hitting a home run. Like, he always impacts the game every time he's in there. And Peralta's had his moments. Look, the Padres could really use David Peralta, you know, to have some more moments, because we don't know when Fernando's going to be back. And right now, that's a big question mark in right field. And, you know,
have you heard anything about him?
All I can tell you is that Fernando was out there throwing earlier this week. But once they started doing drills in the outfield, like they did some outfield stuff at some point during the homestand, some point this weekend, he went to the bucket and was, you know, just kind of helping out. So he was okay to throw and stand out there, but anything that was, you know, running wise as they did drills, that was not something
he was doing. That'll be the big sign that he's close. Once he's running without worry and pain, shouldn't be that long after that that he comes back. That means that it's pretty much fully healed at that point.
I would think once he's running, once he's taking normal BP, I would agree with that. Is he going to need a rehab assignment? I don't know. This is a lot of time to miss, but we're late enough in the year where, you know, maybe they just do live BPs and they get him back out there. I mean, Xander didn't go on a rehab assignment, and he missed a lot of time.
Month, he did. Minor league season ends.
Well, Xander, great point.
Xander was down there for like three or four
games. Sorry, you're right. Yeah, Xander did go on a rehab.
But I will say, Tatis has a track record of like miraculous returning to the lineups. Like, remember when he had COVID and he came back, and I can't remember if he had two home runs or what in the first game, and everyone goes, "Yeah, you must have found a way to really stay sharp." And he goes, "No, I did literally nothing for 10 days. I sat in my room alone for 10 days.
Place the bet for whatever game he comes back, he will hit a home run. He does it all the time.
Nothing. Yeah, no, I just sat and watched TV.
Like, it's a bummer we have video games. It's a bummer we have such an extensive history of him coming back from an injury or whatever. But every time he comes back from missing some time, he comes back with a monster home run.
He does. And so maybe they just feel comfortable when he's ready. He's ready to go back into the lineup.
You would assume that it wouldn't take that long for him to get going. Like, Xander missed a lot of time, and he took some live BP, and he did some stuff, and then he was on the rehab assignment for a few
days. And I think with Xander, with the shoulder injury, there's a process of building up confidence. They're not going to even let Fernando start running until he feels confident enough that, you know,
my guess is
once he does it and there's no pain, he's not going to really think about it again. It's either there or it's not. And once it's healed and it's healed and there's no pain and he can push off, you know, he takes a swing and runs toward first, he sprints in the outfield. Once you've done it once or twice, it's good. Now with Xander, those swings, the dives, the things that, you know, could re-aggravate the shoulder, he even talked about it, like, yeah, I didn't fully trust myself. It's taken a while to come back, and now you've seen some of the power come back lately. With Tatis, I don't think it's necessarily going to be as mental of a thing for him.
I'll tell you what, as a viewer, still, every time Xander has to lunge to make like a diving tag at second base, which has happened a few times, I always think in my head, once he does that, I'm like, I hope the shoulder's all right, because you just know where it is on his body. And you imagine that, and he talked about still, you know, kind of dealing with it as he started to come back. But he's been okay. And by the way, I mean, hopefully it's not getting overlooked. Xander's been great.
It's been really good.
It's been really, really good. Like, this is the Red Sox guy.
Like 400 since he got back?
He's over 400, you know, and there hasn't been a ton of thump. There's been more lately, but he's been really good. He's very important for this club, and it's no coincidence that as he's played well, it's come with them winning too.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick timeout. We got Sam Levitt in studio, in for Woods here on a Monday. Woods will be back on Wednesday. I want to go through some of the rest of the baseball weekend that was, as Sammy would call it, his out-of-town scoreboard on his post-game show. Take a look again at where the Padres stand in the playoff chases and all the context and what's coming up this week as well. As we talked about earlier, Paul, maybe an opportunity week for your San Diego Padres, given the matchups that are coming up. I know, you just say that, and then nothing ever works out the way you expect it to. But we'll look ahead and look back when we return next after a quick timeout here on 97.3 The Fam. Fairly common occurrence the last couple of weeks. I look up on my TV, which we often have on MLB Network, and they're talking about the Padres. Well, picture of A.J. Preller, Bill Shaken of the LA Times. Never shy to trade top prospects. A.J. Preller makes Padres a threat again. Yeah, the conversation continues to be centered.
A whole segment on the Padres bullpen about an hour ago.
Around the Padres, and for good reason. They've been moving up in the world. We got Sam Levitt in studio. We're going to talk about the playoff races and the weekend that was in Major League Baseball right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. And baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. So this past weekend, first of all, in the National League West race, it wasn't Sammy expecting the Padres to be able to make up much ground considering the Dodgers were facing the A's. They did stumble in the first game of that series on Friday, but then came back with wins Saturday and snuck out a 3-2 win yesterday. That was it was all the offense. I think four of the runs were the first inning. The Dodgers scored two on a Kike Hernandez double, and then Brent Rooker hit a home run in the bottom of the inning. And then the only run the rest of the game, I think, was a third-inning RBI single by Biggio, Kevin Biggio. Mm. And that was it. And the I think the A's loaded the bases and had some chances. The Dodgers bullpen, which has been very shaky, managed to cobble it together for about half the game. And they snuck out that 3-2 win to get what would have been a costly series loss had they not even taken 2 out of 3 from the A's. But like the Padres, lose the first, come back, take the last two, and the Padres remain 4.5 games back in the NL West.
Yeah, and I think, not the disappointing, that's not the right word, but I guess the unfortunate part of even the last couple of weeks after the All-Star break for the Padres is that they haven't been able to pull away to no faults of their own, right? There's not this big gap between them and the rest of the wildcard teams. This is a true six-team to maybe even more than that race. I mean, look, the Giants have played a lot better. They're on the outside looking in, kind of out of that group of six, but this is a real race. Like, that's the thing for the Padres. They cannot afford, I'm not saying they can't lose a game. Like, on Friday, you know, I had some of the calls and some of the social media posts. Like, some people were freaking out on Friday after losing to the Rockies. And two things can be true at once. Rockies should be a team you can beat. And also, it's one game out of 162. And good teams lose to bad teams all the time. We saw the A's beat the Dodgers on Friday, like you alluded to. So, look, they're not going to win every game the rest of the way. They do need to keep playing really, really well. Because the margin for error, unfortunately, in this wild card race in particular, is just not very big.
All right. If you do want to catch the Dodgers, though, and it's definitely within the realm of possibility, I would suspect that this would be a week you're going to want to make up a game or two and get a little bit closer because the opportunity is there. Now, the Padres series in Pittsburgh is not an easy one, but you are missing Paul Skeens, who pitched yesterday and will not face the Padres in the next 3 days. While the Dodgers, meanwhile, are taking on the Phillies for the next 3 days starting tonight. Now, the Phillies haven't been playing great either. They did win yesterday, I think snapping a six-game losing streak. But I'd imagine that both teams are going to be pretty up for that series. And then, as the Padres go to Miami, and again, you're going to be nervous because the Padres need to take care of business against a team like the Marlins, the Dodgers then get the Pirates, but they will have to face Paul Skeens, likely, in that series. Whereas the Padres will skip him. So, you know, you can at least see a scenario where the Dodgers, you know, they're not, a 3-3 week isn't terrible for the Dodgers. If the Padres had a good week, 4-2 on the road, or, you know, even could go like 5-1, whether it's, you know, take 2 out of 3 from the Pirates and then sweep the Marlins, if that's possible, you could make up maybe a couple of games there and really tighten up this National League West race.
And I'll take it a step further because it's beyond even just the Dodgers, who have a rougher week than the Padres do. The Diamondbacks play the Guardians this week. The Brewers play the Braves, so that's a tough series for Atlanta. And then the Mets have to play in, so they played in Anaheim yesterday. They have to fly to St. Louis today to make up a game. Then they play tomorrow in Colorado. It's a wacky road trip. They have to make up the game. So they flew to St. Louis last night, make up the game fairly early today, a little bit earlier than normal, and then go to Colorado after that. So they have a rough travel week. And look, I mean, things get wacky in Denver, right? With the altitude, like, that's a tough week for the Mets.
So you saw the Rockies aren't, I mean, they're not playing terribly.
No.
I mean, they took one from the Padres and could have had that second game as well. So maybe now they can give the Mets a little trouble this week.
So hypothetically, yes, it could be a good, beneficial, gaining ground separation type of week for the Padres. Of course, with that, you know, it seems so often the obvious stretches where those things should be true, where there should be good things that happen, so often doesn't work out that way. And then when you have a 9-game road trip to open up the second half facing two first-place teams, goes extraordinarily well. So who knows?
You mentioned the Braves. They're going to be facing the Brewers, and they've been teetering a little bit. They only took 2 of 4 from the Marlins this weekend, including losing both Saturday and Sunday. They got shut out 7-0 yesterday. The Padres have made up some ground. We had the stat earlier, but since the All-Star break, Padres 11-3. Now, they haven't gained any ground on the Diamondbacks, half a game since the break. The Diamondbacks are 11-4. But the Braves have gone 7-9 since the break. So you've made up 5 games in the standings on the Atlanta Braves since the start of the All-Star break. And now, in a virtual tie for the top wild card spot. Technically, the Braves are a percentage point ahead because they've played 2 games fewer and they have 1 less loss, but that will even out at the end of the year. They'll both play 162, and the Padres, again, have that tiebreaker locked up if it comes down to it. So essentially, give the Padres, I think, the edge right now in that wild card race against the Atlanta Braves. The Diamondbacks are the team, to me, that they're the worrisome team at the moment. They've actually been the best team in baseball. If you go back before the All-Star break, they've had the best record, I think, you know, arbitrary endpoint.
July 3rd.
19-8 since July something, early in July. They've been playing really good baseball lately. They continued that over the weekend, taking, I believe, 2 of 3 from the Pirates, including facing Skeens yesterday, and while they were losing early 4-0, they got a couple off Skeens, and then they, you know, did that Padres thing where they plucky and rallied back against the bullpen, getting a 3-run home run by Jock Peterson, go ahead, I think, in the 7th inning, and then went on to a 6-5 over the Pirates. So that was a big one for the Diamondbacks, both game and series, to keep the momentum that they have built really strongly since early in July.
Yeah, Diamondbacks to me are pretty scary for a few reasons. Number one, they've been there, done that, right? They've been able to make the postseason, get hot enough to make it. They know what it's like to be there. They've got veterans on that team. They've got young players on that team. They've got some good starting pitching on that team. And I'm a big fan of Torey Lovello. I am. I think he does a really good job. I think he's a really good manager. So I'm with you. They scare me a lot. Atlanta's really interesting because I feel like with them, it's a lot of pedigree in who they've been, and there's a lot of reality about this season that would tell you with the way they're playing, the injuries they have, maybe there's a kind of legitimate chance that when this is all said and done in a month and a half, 2 months, they could be on the outside looking in of this whole thing, and they haven't played well, and I didn't love what they did at the deadline. The Braves are interesting because I think we've all sort of like penciled them in to one of those spots. And I'm not totally sure they're going to get there. I'm really not.
I called that in the roundtable like 3 weeks ago. I said, I don't know if the Braves, they have too many injuries. At some point, as good as you are at overcoming injuries, and they won a World Series overcoming huge injuries, you can't do it forever. And Strider and Acuna again, and now Albies, it's just too much for any team necessarily to overcome. And I'm not surprised by the fade that we've seen. Now, the Diamondbacks are scary, but they can't take away your playoff spot right now because they have one of the playoff spots. They could pass you, but they can't take it away. The Mets are the first team behind you that actually is trying to break their way in. And they were kind of the scary team a little bit before the All-Star break. They've cooled off a little bit. They're 9-7 since the break, but
and
just dropped
5-5, I think, in their last 10.
Dropped 2 of 3 to the Angels. So I'm not counting out the Mets by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not as hot as they used to be. But they're a team definitely keep your eye on them, because as long as you hold off the teams that are now behind you, which include the Mets, the Cardinals, who just dropped 3 of 4, the Chicago Cubs, so they're in kind of a spot where they kind of need to pick things up. The Giants are not out of it either. They, you know, with Blake Snell on a second half Blake Snell heater, even though they're a game under 500, they're still on the fringe of contention. What are they, about 4.5, I think, out of a playoff spot? 5, somewhere around there. And then you've got the Pirates, who the Padres will, this week, have a chance. The Pirates have to face the Padres and the Dodgers. There's a chance the Pirates are pretty much irrelevant after this week. They know that, though. So they're going to be coming basically like their season is on the line over the next 3 days against the Padres and then 3 days after that against the Dodgers.
And you really start looking at this like, if the Giants were to make a run, they're 4.5 out. So they're kind of outside of that quote-unquote group of 6 right now. But striking distance, I mean, there's a world where it could be San Diego, Arizona, and San Francisco if the Giants got hot.
I may be more worried about the Giants than the Braves. It's crazy
because
where the standings are right now.
When I see Blake Snell start to look the way he's looked, and they've got Webb, and they've got good players.
Didn't Robbie Ray pitch?
Yeah, Robbie Ray.
Well, coming back as well.
I didn't see what he did in his last start, but his first start was really good.
First start was good, for sure. Took a no-hitter, like, through something.
There is a world where the Giants are right in this thing, and there may be 3 NL West teams, like, right there.
It's crazy that they sold off a little bit at the deadline.
Yeah, they didn't. They weren't aggressive. I mean,
they didn't do a full
sell-off.
Teardown, but...
But, you know, I wonder if
they're... In what world do you give up a starting pitcher and you're like, your outfielder, when you're thinking you have a chance at making a run and...
They're trying to have their cake and eat it, too. They want to pick... They wanted to play the market and pick up, you know, in a seller's market, what they could... But also, they still want to compete. And right now, they're toeing that line okay. They're not out of it. They still have a chance. And they have more momentum than some of the other teams in the National League wildcard race right now. And, you know, those are teams, the Padres and the Diamondbacks, that or the Diamondbacks and the Giants, that the Padres don't have a season series lead against, I believe. I think they're a game or two under 500 against both of them right now.
I think so. I'd have to look.
Those last series remaining against those two teams could be very, very critical.
Like
as well
we've
as
said,
the last series against the Dodgers late in September.
And like we've said, like there is, and again, it doesn't mean you can't lose 1, 2, 3 in a row at some point. Personally, I think you can't go on any type of extended skid.
No more 5 games.
Nope, skids. Can't have it.
All right, that's what's going on in the playoff race. Paulie's got some headlines in the Rounder Report. Also want to look at the bottom of baseball and what's going on there as well. One more hour, Sammy in studio next here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.